You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 20 April. Today in 2020, West Texas Intermediate crude went negative. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. Straits of Hormuz, it's closed, it's open, it's confusing. Surely we are grinding to a peace deal. Process selling down its delivery hero stake. And I want to touch on that negative oil. Nick was there. It remains the craziest thing I've seen. Returning with Henry Prinsloo, Head of Employee Benefits Momentum Corporate. Death benefits and why they might not go to your nominee. Then state of local small business. Decent 2025. How they're looking for 2026. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, City of Joburg on review for rating downgrades by Moody's. The city's on agency watch over its delinquent financial statements. And Business Day, draft AI policy leaves businesses with unanswered questions. Department of Communications and Digital Technologies admits policy is likely incomplete. Morning markets. The US was green on Friday. S&P up 1.2%, NASDAQ 1.3% higher. East is mostly green. Sydney, the exception, down 1%. Tokyo is 1% higher. Hong Kong almost 1% up. And Tencent 2.7% into the green. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 4,812. Brent is down, but it's complicated. It was in the 80s on Friday. It is now 95.24, which is lower but higher but confusing. Platinum 2,105, palladium 1,570. The rand is 16.38, bitcoin 74,500, and top 40 opening call red open 940 points, 0.83% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, I think my trying to explain oil price movements kind of sums up what's happening. We had the news that Straits of Hormuz was open and peace in our time, and oil collapsed on Friday, and then the weekend happened, and it's back in the mid-90s. My sense is we are grinding, perhaps operative word, slowly to a peace deal, perhaps.
Yeah, morning, Samuel. This flip-flopping continuing, but I will say this, the sort of, I guess, the extremities, the big swings are certainly slowing down a little bit. I mean, there's been a 5% move in oil, as you said, but, I mean, Asian markets are actually mixed. Some are actually higher. I mean, S&P futures this morning down 0.6. It's almost like shrugging it off. I think it's almost like you cry wolf enough times, you know, the market starts starting to ignore it. And of course, you've got that clock ticking, haven't you? You've got this USRN ceasefire that expires on Wednesday. So, you know, what happens after Wednesday? You know, you've also got the Lebanon and Israel ceasefire. I think that expires on Sunday. So lots of deadlines coming in once again. We're all waiting, wanting to know what happens after these deadlines expire.
Yeah, there is apparently face-to-face talks that will happen this evening for negotiations. Kind of last minute, but anyway. I want to totally trench track back to 2020. You will remember this. Goodness is about it. We had Brent go negative. Now, there's some T's and C's. I mean, this was the cushions contract, which is a physical settlement, and it was the May future that was expiring, and you literally were going to you were receiving oil, and I've never seen anything like it before or since.
Yeah, I know. In my time too as well, I've never, ever seen it. I don't think we ever will either. I mean, yeah, it was that May delivery contract. It was West Texas. That is a particular type of oil that's traded. It's one of the more active contracts trades in the States. And what actually happened, if you remember, it was sort of in the peak COVID. Mm. So there was obviously unprecedented less demand for oil. Those sort of storage capacities were starting to fill up. And where that West Texas contract is actually stored is in Cushing, Oklahoma. And once you sort of take delivery, off you go and you send your oil barrels and they stick it in the Cushing storage capacity. But there was no capacity. Yeah. So what happened with like literally like 30 minutes to go. You can imagine all these traders playing hot potato. Who's going to be left with this? Because, you know, the irony is most people that, you know, stop to think when you trade these things, at one stage you actually have to take delivery of them if you can't sell them. So there was the fear that everyone was going to take delivery. Settling down minus 36 or $37, I think it was.
Yeah, 37.63 is my daughter.
37.63 on the day. Yeah, never seen that again. I don't think we ever will.
Yeah, I think it's a lesson. Physical delivery. I got caught in that in Agri once, way back in maize.
Listen, I'd rather get a pile of maize than a pile of oil barrels, to be honest.
It was 200 tons of maize. It was a big
deal. Sorry,
big
Mom, pile. I've got something on my driveway.
Yeah. A quick last point. We're seeing process sold down into Delivery Hero stake. That's part of their whole restructuring. This was the European, I suppose, their equivalent of Competition Commission, saying you need to set it down. Big loss, but focusing the portfolio, I suppose, is the phrase.
Yeah, positives and negatives, you're right. It was a requirement from the European Commission, their version of the regulatory compliance, saying they had to do a sales. I think it was mandatory they had to do it if they wanted to buy that Just Eat takeaway. And so they get a nice big cash injection. It's costing about 5.2 billion rand in cash injection, which is good. Also, as you mentioned, they get a premium, 20 euros per share, which is also pretty good. Overall, I don't think it's a bad deal. And as you said, it is in line with their recent strategy to focus on Just Eat. So, all in all, I think more positives than negatives.
We'll leave it there. Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today goes back to that fragile piece. Is the worst over? And I think maybe that's it. Is that we are moving in the right direction. Slowly, grinding. We're going to have flip-flops along the way, but it does seem to be moving in the right direction. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Henry Pinsloo, Head of Employee Benefits at Momentum Corporate. Henry, I appreciate the time today. Most people assume that if they name a beneficiary on their pension fund or in our will, that's where the money will go, but this is not always necessarily the case. Is something a case between the pension fund adjudicator recently indicated?
Indeed, Simon. Yeah, thanks for having me. And in fact, unfortunately, this is quite a common occurrence where people's wishes at the time that they draft either their will or their beneficiary nomination don't play out in reality. And the reason for this is really the complexity around retirement fund benefits and death benefits in particular. Mm-hmm. And I think we've mentioned Section 37C a few times. It is one of the most hotly discussed, debated, court actioned, complained about section of the Pension Fund Act. And so there's a lot of complexity around it, unfortunately.
The key point is that the fund trustees, they need to ensure that funds are benefited equitably with a primary focus on dependency. Now, the equitably perhaps is an easy part. That dependency perhaps is the harder part. But they've got a duty to survivors, not just the will.
Indeed. So the Act is very clear on what the requirements of the Board of Trustees is. And in fact, it's an incredibly difficult job to do a full investigation, to understand somebody's situation. And this is where I think it gets a little bit complicated, where there are different types of dependents. So there are so-called legal dependents. Mm-hmm. And this easiest example of this is someone that you would legally be required to maintain, for example, a spouse or your child. Then you get what are called factual dependents. And this is where it gets a bit murky, because a factual dependent is anybody who is supported by the beneficiary or could have been supported by them in the future had they not passed away. And this is where often we find a lot of dispute, debate. In fact, sometimes people don't even know that the person who passed away had other factual dependents. So there's been instances of people having other life partners, other families that their sort of primary family didn't even know about. And so it gets quite difficult. And the trustees need to take all these people into account. And then on top of your dependents, there are the so-called nominees. So when you join a retirement fund, you'll fill out a nomination form for beneficiaries, and there you'll put in there where you would like your money to be allocated on the unfortunate passing. And so the trustees really have quite a tricky job to put all of this together, to do a full investigation, to understand who are the dependents, factual and legal, and then also to take into account their circumstances. So their current financial circumstances, their ability to work, what level of dependency they had on the deceased. And from that, they then have to make an equitable allocation. And that's, you know, obviously in itself is a complicated matter.
Yeah, I take your point. And I mean, this is not malicious. This is, and I like the point around the factual, the legal, I get a child or spouse. But I mean, I could have, let's say, a friend, and I give them R1,000 a month to pay for petrol for them to get to work every day. That is now, I mean, I've been supporting them. This is factual. They could come and say, hey, we need that thousand. It's important.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk of things like, you know, friends, you know, a family, sort of children born out of wedlock, you know, they can be also, you know, children that are belong to a life partner that aren't your biological child, but who you support. So it gets quite complicated. And I think, you know, where it gets really tricky is the trustees really have a duty to perform a thorough investigation. Yeah. And so they have to rely on information, which is often provided by the various dependents, you know, various documentation. And so it's really, really important that your documents are in order. So, you know, not only your beneficiary nomination form, your will, but then also to take all the different types of benefits into account. Because what makes it slightly more murky is that pension fund benefits are treated differently to other types of benefits that would be provided, for example, from a different life policy or a funeral policy that's not provided by the fund. And so making sure that there's a sort of a unified place where somebody knows how all these things interlink and work together and who all the people are that are in your life, it's quite important to have something like that in place.
And is that it? Because my next question was going to be is how does a member sort of protect their intentions? Because, I mean, the key point is, you know, I've passed. I'm no longer available. It's going to be, I suppose, documentation. It's going to be, I mean, don't try and hide things and be upfront, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I think sadly, maybe that's where some of the really, you know, the really heartbreaking cases come through where, you know, people have these sort of dual lives where they have other partners and other children and they haven't told anyone that nobody knows about. And these people sort of come out through the process. So I think definitely try and have all your documentation in place. So make sure that you have a will. I think, you know, estate planning is sometimes seen as something for the wealthy. When it comes to, you know, Section 37C death benefits, often, you know, for anybody across the spectrum, the benefit is quite meaningful. You know, often we see, you know, clients with, you know, things like 3 or 4 or 5 times their annual salary as a death benefit. So no matter how much you're earning, you know, that is going to be a decent sum of money and it's going to bring with it a lot of complexity. So making sure that you sort of understand what it all means in terms of the different benefits that you have, different policies you may have with different employers or different funds, and then making sure that you have somebody who's able to help you pull it all together. And I think, you know, something like having a life file where all your really important documents are and everything is sort of set out there. So if you have children, even if it's from different relationships, make sure you have copies of their IDs, maybe even a little family tree or a story that explains who you are and who all these people are in your life. Because, you know, for a board of trustees to go and try and figure out who was your life partner, who is your spouse, you know, which of your biological children are there, who is dependent on whom, can get quite murky. So trying to simplify it as much as possible, it gives it a bigger chance of your actual will and your actual intent being followed in after your passing.
And I like that, a life file. I've always called it a letter for when I'm dead. A life file is a much more friendly phrase. We'll leave it there. That's Andre Princely, Head of Employee Benefits, Momentum Corporate. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Colin Timothy, he is Regional Director, Europe, Middle East, Africa at Xerox. Colin, appreciate the early morning. The Xerox 2026 State of South African Small Business Report out. The headline number, which I think is unexpected, certainly I was surprised by it. 80% of businesses that were surveyed report revenue growth over the last year, 75% increased profits. Our ability as South African small businesses to adapt, evolve and do the business is outstanding. That's a really big achievement.
Oh, hey, Simon, thanks very much for having me. Yes, at Xero, we've been doing this survey now for probably 5 or 6 years. And I must say, every year we see the resilience coming out in the numbers from small businesses. And as you said, 80% have experienced revenue growth over the last 12 months. And it's really positive to see profits being realized from that revenue growth. And another interesting outcome has been the sort of focus on reliability and steady growth. So looking at about 84% who said that they were looking to consolidate and sort of making sure that they're ready for that next stage of growth. And so making money and then taking the time to invest in the business and making sure that they're ready for that next level of growth over the next 12 months.
And notwithstanding, I mean, the challenge is cash flow. And to be clear, cash flow is always a challenge. I mean, I suspect even if you're Microsoft, you're kind of watching the bank balance from time to time. That remains a constant challenge, particularly for the smaller businesses, which means their accountants are, they make the put their accountants as their sort of most senior advisors in a sense.
Yeah, 77% said that accountants were their trusted advisor. And we see that a lot in all the conversations we have. We were very fortunate last week to host the Xero Roadshow. Mm-hmm. And we saw about, we met with 4,000 accountants across South Africa. And these are individuals who are in that trusted advisor position. You know, they're really helping these small businesses make the big decisions. What do they do with that profits? You know, what do they do with that growth? How do they ensure that they're ready for the next 12 months and able to, again, weather whatever storms seem to face these small businesses? Cash flow always comes up. You know, cash flow is always a challenge for small businesses, whether you're getting paid by other small businesses, government, or other corporates. And one of the ways that small businesses have actually been dealing with this, which I find is quite fascinating, is the adoption of digital tools. And we're seeing about 45% who said that they're actually adopting digital technology, like the ability to get paid immediately on their invoices via mobile devices. Mm-hmm. And practices like that are really important. You know, using digitization to not just record your accounting and financial information, which is obviously not a great focus for many small businesses, but they're looking at how these digital tools can help them, you know, get their money quicker, get paid sooner. So when you issue an invoice, get paid straight away. Like, why wait?
Yeah, why wait? A perfectly sound question. And you mentioned the digitization, which of course, a part of that now is AI, is the artificial intelligence, which they're using to make them more efficient. They're using it to free up time, which again, for a small business, is hugely valuable.
Yeah, they've got to, you know, small businesses and employees and owners that are involved in them have to focus on the core function and core activities. And there's a lot of administration, as I mentioned earlier, you know, accounting and tax as an example is not something that most business owners have time for. And using automation, you know, using some of the new tools that are coming out that are available to automate all of these manual processes, just allow them to focus on what's really important. And in the small business report, we saw half that were using AI and tools in their operational workflows already. And so, again, this frees up time for them and solves a lot of the opportunity cost challenges that small businesses have, enabling them to focus on the core activity, the core business, drive that revenue, drive that profit, and do so in a sustainable way, most importantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. I mean, and the other part, flip side of the AI and the digitization is that a lot are saying they feel that they need more support understanding how it fits. And I suppose it's A, because it's a fairly new technology, and B, because it is fast moving. I mean, I log on to my chatbot almost every day. There's a new update, a new upgrade. It does make it a tougher ask.
Well, it's a tougher ask for everyone, not just small business owners. You know, here at Xero, we work in a technology business that I feel overwhelmed. I can barely keep up with all of the changes and the information. So I don't know how a small business owner or their teams keep up with it. But the reality is that, you know, with accountants being trusted advisors, and 77% saying that they rely on them, you know, very often we're seeing accountants now fulfill that role of technology expert as well and helping them sort of filter a lot of this information. And so a lot of the accountants have moved to this more digital mindset and are providing their clients with these tools and helping them operationalize some of these workflows in their business, which improves things like cash flow, enables them to make good decisions, but most importantly, enable them to take action, which they've previously, I think, invested a lot of time in, but not been able to do so you know, too efficiently.
Yeah, I agree on that 100%. We'll leave it there. That's Colin Timmis. He's a regional director, Europe, Middle East, Africa at Xero. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Sean Dindiri on Friday, talking about 91's asset under management, good growth, thanks in part to the deal with Sanlam. But even aside from that good growth, we asked you if asset managers were a good investment. Over half said yes. Rising markets boost their profits. A quarter said only if the returns are delivering. The rest said risk is when markets weaken. And that is the point. They enjoy the rising market, not the falling market. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.